She had the men arrange 6 chairs on one side of the table, 2 on the other.
Welcome to 2C1C, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast founded in 2010 by myself, Will Lentz, Greg Atkinson, and Brett Zeiler. Now hosted by myself, Daryl Lloyd, and Kyle Vansel, with guest appearances by past hosts and more. Many thanks to George R.R. Martin and Fantasy Flight Games for making this possible, Card Game DB for our hosting, Josh Woodward for this CC licensed music, and you, our listeners, for making it all worthwhile. This is Season 4.5.
Is that it?
Okay.
That's the quote.
That was your quote?
That's the quote.
This is the last time I let Daryl pick the quote.
Well, I didn't pick the quote.
I'm like, where's the rest?
If I picked the quote, we'd know what it would have been.
Those are the words
at
of Martin.
The beginning of the episode.
Okay? The words of Martin.
That sounds like a bunch of horse shit.
Let's play Guess Where It's From.
Guess where it's from. She's arranging tables.
I'll give you a hint. It's a Feast for Crows.
Yeah, it's the part where Samuel L. Jackson says, "Get these motherfucking snakes off my motherfucking plane."
It's Brienne. It's Brienne.
Nope. It's Alana Stone.
Sansa. Yeah, Sansa Jackson.
Yeah, Sansa doing whatever with Baelish.
Oh, right. Wow. See, I would have guessed Cersei. Something.
When they were, I think when you're bringing all those people up to meet with Baelish, right?
Yeah. Oh, wow. Look at Clarence Bruno. Yeah. When they're all hiking and crap.
Yep.
Nice.
Really glad we had that
Bruno.
Yeah.
Maybe we could make this into a new game. We could pick an obscure quote, then let the listeners guess where the hell it's from.
Like a Blues Clues episode? Like we pause for a minute? What's your guess?
It'll be great.
What's that?
You're right.
Yeah, this is the most disorganized intro ever. How about I welcome the listeners to Two Champs and a Chump, another episode post 150. I can't believe we're still here, and neither can you. I'm Kenan, sometimes known as Will, and my co-hosts are...
I'm Daryl. I was going to be Daryl Danger, but apparently it's the name of some shitty other band in the world.
I'm still Kyle.
And John Bruno here, mathlete.
Yeah, got our guest host on. Listeners may know him from, I don't know, repeatedly winning the Joust World Championships and making the Melee Final Table last year.
Crusher of dreams, breaker of worlds.
Yes. Specifically, crushing Kyle's dreams.
Yeah, you know, that's what I do.
He's really good at it, Kyle.
It's why he gets up in the morning.
I just do his job. Empathize with you there.
Welcome, everybody.
Yeah. So, I think we've got a fun episode on tap today. We're going to pick John's brain for a few things. But before we get into that, one thing that, you know, I really don't think we've addressed much here on the show yet are regionals. We mentioned when FFG put up the regional map and the applications, but they've announced where and when they all are, and we haven't really talked about that yet. We've got a semi-respectable spread of Thrones players on the episode today. So I'm just kind of curious if you guys have any thoughts, if there's any surprises here in what we're seeing in the States or across the world that we may be less familiar with that.
Sure. This list kicks ass.
Okay.
That's my thought.
All right.
Well, everything I go to made it. The two stores in Chicago, my favorite got it. We got one over Wisconsin, which was great. Missouri still got one. Tulsa got one. I guess my one downside is Rings is unofficial, though that may make it even better because now I don't feel bad about showing up hungover / still drunk. But, yeah, I won. I got all my toys to play with.
Hmm.
Well, I don't know how much you guys have talked about in general, just about the number of regionals compared to last year. Because I personally love the idea that they did store championships, mm-hmm. and I like that regionals mean something more, where I really felt last year at Worlds was kind of watered down because so many people had buys. There were mm-hmm. probably 30, 40 people who had buys last year at Worlds. You just had so many buys. Now, this year, you have to win a store championship to get a buy into a regional. So, you know, you don't need to have that store championship just to play in the regional, of course, but you play in the regional. You win a regional, what does that mean now? It just gives you a buy at Gen Con. I mean, obviously it's national championships, but it gives you a buy at Gen Con. What does winning Gen Con give you? The buy at Worlds. There's only going to be maybe four or five people that actually have a buy at Worlds. Whoever wins Gen Con and whichever people from other, you know, outside of the U.S. show up to play at Worlds, which we've only had about, you know, three to four each year. So your max going to have five people having a buy at Gen Con. I mean, at Worlds, sorry, which I think is actually a great idea. I like that. I think that it really forces you to play better at bigger events.
You know, I was kind of curious what you would think about the more limited regionals coming from California, which had how many last year?
I played in eight regionals last year.
Holy cow. Well, those weren't all in California, were they? Did you hit one or two out of state?
I played in one outside of California. I played in seven of the eight regionals in California last year.
Wow. That's impressive.
Yeah.
But I mean, I like the prestige. It was like it's always meant something to me to win some of these bigger regionals. Like Missouri right. usually has a good toe, and that carried some weight. And it kind of sucked to show up to Gen Con or Worlds with like regional champ swag, and people go, "Oh, you won a regional? That's cool." So did so and so and so and so, and like three of their friends won a regional tournament, and like this just doesn't have the same weight. And I like that kind of prestige, and there's still some merit to winning a regional, because only one person's winning Gen Con, one person's winning Worlds. There's now, I feel like, a true middle ground there where there's some success you can have that's quantifiable.
No, I agree with that too. The other thing I would say about that is regarding the number of people is now regionals are big events. You really have to make an effort to go to it, and you should have a decent sized turnout at them. Last year when you had regionals and they were like, just take California where we had, you know, eight different regionals in California, you didn't really feel the need to go to everyone. You can go play at, like, whichever one you can make and go to it. Where some regionals last year, especially spread out around the country, when you have smaller states and they still have three, four, five regionals, some people won regionals last year where there are only four people at the regional. So, I mean, that doesn't, you know, sure, you get a regional credit for it. You had to buy at Worlds because you won a four-person regional. To me, that doesn't hold enough weight. And like Kyle said, the prestige of it. Because if you remember in the earlier years, I mean, you know, most of us have been around for since the beginning years of the game. Even in the first few years, like 2004, the first year they had regionals, 2005, the second year, there was a small number. There were less than, you know, 15 regionals available back then, too. So winning a regional then meant something.
Yeah, I really can't see a regional getting below 25 people with the way they got it set up. I think that'll be the smallest one we see is at worst 25.
I hope so. Because that, I think, is still a pretty respectable tournament.
I agree.
You know, question on the scheduling. Does any of that kind of surprise you guys? I'm kind of scrolling through the list here, and it looks like kind of the international tournaments tend all toward the early section of the regional season. I'm seeing UK is all in, like, one's the last weekend in April, and then everything's in May. Poland's at the beginning of June, Finland's in May, stuff like that. Australia spreads it out a little more from May to July. But, like, the U.S. seems to have clumped way more to the end of that scale. Like, June, the last weekend of June on out to the end of the regional season, which I think was the end of July, right? And I heard the D.C. regional is moving theirs. It was originally in May. They're moving it to the end of July. So that gets later. I mean, and I know we've got Iowa and Tulsa scheduled on the same weekend. I don't know.
I think the big reason for that is the U.S. had store championships. So we had store championships to deal with, and they're still going on pretty much through, like, this month. So there's that. We had that to play for first, and then we have regionals. The second thing I think is internationally, you know, if you win a regional, you win your championship, you need to worry about booking travel. So they really should have this earlier just to, for travel purposes of booking your flight and reservations and taking care of all the things you need to do to get over here to the U.S. Just a thought.
Well, in the school system, I mean, I'm going to plead ignorance and not know how things are structured in Europe, but I think you kind of funneled most U.S. regionals are going to set in June or July just because that's when people can travel. So I think just naturally that's where you gravitate to so you can draw in bigger numbers.
So how many regionals do you think you guys will each play in this year?
Two for sure. I'm hoping to also make it three and make it up to Days of Ice and Fire up at FNB.
Yeah, I'm the same. I would love to do three, but I'm probably looking more at two. But I'm going to shoot for three.
Realistically, four official ones, one unofficial.
Nice.
I've always been the traveler of this little trio.
Yes.
I think I'll make two for sure. Oh, there's two in California, so I'll definitely be at those two. But I'm going to try to get to one more up north. But also, I might, if I can work things out school-wise, well, because I may or may not do summer school, but I may try to get to one somewhere that I haven't been to before. Like maybe.
I'm just saying, Iowa lets you drink at ours. We do it at a hotel. Booze can flow freely during the games.
Well, I've had some offers from a previous two-time world champion, former host of this show, to come visit and stay there. At some
man.
Boy, that narrows it down a little, but not enough. It could still be two different former hosts.
I will also say maybe I can narrow it down by somebody who's been married in the last 2 years. I don't know. That could be either one.
That still doesn't help.
What about the one with the new home?
Yeah, what about the one who actually won a championship when it really meant something and it was just one tournament only?
That is true. That narrows it down a lot.
Yeah, okay, that narrows it down more.
They still mean something, but obviously when we only had just one championship, that was kind of nice. But, yeah, Greg offered me to come stay over there, so I may take him up on that one.
We'd love to have you, Bruno.
I'd love to hang out with you guys. It'd be a lot of fun.
Is anybody else, and I don't know why, but I thought the game was getting kind of big in China. I don't see a Chinese regional here. Is that because they just don't expect them to make the trip to Gen Con, or...
Well, I don't know enough details for sure on their end, but I think maybe there's a local company running the organized play.
Ah.
With the language barrier, that might make some sense.
Yeah.
And just the logistics.
But they do have some good turnouts over there.
Yeah, they do.
Gathered.
I do enjoy watching their streams.
I have not watched any streams from China, but...
Well, that's why I've never seen you at the World's Final Table, Daryl.
Oh!
Ouch, ouch. You know, actually, what I've been thinking about, which would be fun to do. I mean, it's kind of a long shot, but it would be fun to do. I would have loved to have gone to Alvaro's Battle for the Wall tournament, but just timing-wise, didn't work out for school. But I don't know if you look, but there is a championship in London at the end of July.
Mm-hmm.
If I do teach summer school and make enough money for that, I might actually consider going to that. That'd be a lot of fun to go to and play.
Oh, that'd be sweet.
Danny has talked it up big. I guess out of some airline has, I think it's out of L.A., Atlanta, and somewhere in New York. There's three airports, but they do, I think it's 300 round trip to Heathrow right now. Mm-hmm.
Holy crap, that's freaking awesome.
So flight's kind of icky, and you're going to, you know, sit in a cramped seat for 7-8 hours on the flight over, but you're in Heathrow for $300.
Yep.
So, we've talked about coordinating some kind of Thrones hop across the pond trip. Again, this is all post-wedding.
Too.
Let's have some fun, but...
Yeah, because I believe, wasn't Danny talking about that to Kristen via Facebook walls?
I think we're trying to find a couple to go with, so it's not all...
Yeah, so I may get drugged into that as well.
Daryl, that
sounds like a bad trip.
We could be your couple.
I am more than down for that.
That's
more than down for that. But at the time she was talking about going to, if London has a good one, we'll go there. But I hear Stalag's real pretty and super affordable. I think it's like 150 euros or something, and that's your lodging, entry fee, and food for the weekend.
What?
Damn.
So for 500 a person to go play in a castle in the German mountains seems like a good weekend.
Yeah.
Pretty dope.
The tough part is that it's the week after Worlds.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
But it would definitely be a fun thing to do.
So I need a job that will let me off for like 2 weeks. Exactly. And pay me enough to.
I was
going to
go with getting the cake syndrome, as Polly would say, one of our meta mates. He's like, Thrones is like cake, and you eat it, and you're like, this is great. Then by the end of Worlds Week, you're like, oh, no more cake. No more cake.
Yeah.
Two back-to-back weekends of major tournaments seems. Yes, but I don't know if I could do back-to-backs. That'd be rough. But fun.
Especially big ones like that, you know? 100-plus people, 2 weekends in a row.
Right, but, I mean, let's not forget that you're getting to go, you know, to another country. That's pretty
freaking Germany.
Rad.
Right.
Yeah, I'm like...
I could show off how little I remember from my, 7 years of German.
Dude, fuck
say,
that. Get
I
an app,
I can order
man.
A beer and ask where the library is and say I love pancakes. That's about it.
I mean, and really, that's about all you need.
Though the rooms are hostel style, so that's why we're trying to get a group, because if someone has to see me in my, like... leopard-spotted bikini boxers, I feel like that should be John Bruno and Daryl Lloyd.
That's why I want to go.
Yeah, that's the main reason I want to go. That'd be really nice.
Cards in a show?
Cards
in
a
show.
Sure.
And to sleep with Daryl.
Yeah, hell yeah. Dude, and I'll learn German super easily. There's all kinds of apps you can get for your phone and shit. No problem. I'll pick it up
that
in like a day.
That may have been the most ignorant thing we've said on the show in months.
I'll pick it up in a day. Glockenspiel.
So, we've had a couple new agendas hit the meta recently in the new pack here. Of course,
terrible.
They are. Do what?
They're terrible.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely terrible. As evidenced by the several top four appearances that they had at store championships the last weekend with Conquest. And, I think Brooks won one with Conquest this last
week. He did. He beat me in the finals.
Hey, see? There we go. So, yep. You know, we are probably not going to do, dear listeners, talk about Conquest. Unless, of course, Mr. John Bruno has some wisdom to lay on us. I thought mainly we may focus on Defiance, which people seem to not be doing a whole lot of yet.
I like that idea. What do you guys think about? Then I'll tell you what I think.
Well, just really quick, I did play a Conquest deck earlier in the week, and I had a blast with it. And it was Lannister Conquest to Targaryen, and it was pretty sweet. So I mean, we don't have to delve a lot into that, but it's pretty legit.
Yeah,
I think I'll just say something real quick too.
Yeah,
I think that the thing I loved about it. I like the new Conquest agendas. It reminds me of the old when we were able to play specific alliances. Like when we had the Lannister Greyjoy one or the Targaryen Stark one, and we had to play the 20 power. I mean, I've always hated the current one where you have to, you know, you either give up. They only need 10 power to win the game, or they can get 2 gold and draw a card. I don't mind giving them occasional power because I lost a character or location or an attachment. But... I mean, I have a chance to get that back, so that's pretty nice. And if you happen to play against, which happened at our tournament this past weekend, somebody is playing a siege deck, you're like, thank you, because you can't claim any of that power for your house. Unless it happens to have somebody dying during a military
game. Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Oh, yeah.
So it's pretty sweet. It actually is really nice. It definitely gives you a nice freedom to be able to play 2 different types of deck. And I have been thinking a lot about, I haven't built one yet, but I think... the Martell Baratheon, Baratheon Stark, Martell Greyjoy, Baratheon Greyjoy. If you go with a noble deck build, I think it could be pretty solid too.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been thinking about tinkering around with like some Martell to Targaryen stuff as well, and Martell to Lannisters. You know, just there's a ton of options. It really opens some doors.
And those new, I mean the current unique locations that we have that all produce one influence on Lower the First, out of cost this or out of cost that, out of house this. Those are awesome too. I mean, you have one of those in your deck too, and you know, you are playing that character pretty ineffective and pretty cheaply too, and you are getting some influence if you need it for some influence events. This is why I like this build better than neutral. I don't want to go too far off on that, but I tried recently a neutral Long Voyage deck and hated it mostly because you cannot play any specific house events. And that's the thing I think is lacking with the neutral deck.
I mean, and there's a few solid events that reference a House X character to pay the cost, but are not actually house only.
I agree.
I've had a lot of fun with that. And, you know, Lannister pays his debts out of Martell with some of the dual house characters and things like that.
Yeah, Lannister pays his debts is the first one I was thinking of, too. I actually had that in that deck because I was playing a good bit of Lannister, but yeah. It's still not that great, but I think when you get like House X only events and you get to play those and you still get some benefits of using characters from another house, that's where I really think the Conquest deck is going to be pretty solid.
Yeah. Well, and like you were talking about the power, I mean, the thing with, say, the treaties, you're spotting them 5 power right off the bat. Pardon me. But if you're playing Conquest, you know, they have the potential to gain 5 power, potentially more even, but they have to work for it. Like, you flip a treaty out, they've got it right off the bat. Even if you're using Alliance and they're getting cards or gold, like, they have that ability right off the bat without having to do anything on their end. I like that Conquest, like, puts the onus on your opponent to work for that to actually ever be a drawback.
Right. You also can interact with it. With the treaty agendas, there's no gaining that 5 power back. With Alliance, unless you can kneel their house card or they're playing, unless we're playing like melee games, there's only scenarios I've ever seen where that's been a drawback is when I need to kneel my own house card for stuff, but like it's not an issue.
Yeah.
And this is the first one where you can do something about it. Yeah, they gain power, but you can take it back. You can control the drawback yourself.
Yeah, I think we found that it is a nice balance. You look at the power behind the throne. You know, your opponent has to win an intrigue to gain something from your agenda, and it seems like a nice balancer.
The other thing that's nice about it, too, is the fact that we now have this prized keyword, which I do kind of like. You know, it's nice to be able to have a few little more powerful cards, whether they're characters, locations, events, when they have this prize value, so you really have to weigh, do I want to put the strong card in there versus the fact that I may have to give up some power to play it, especially if you're playing a plot or an event where that's immediate. If you have a character, location, or attachment, you can always hold it back. But if you really want to play that event or that plot, you know, you're playing, you immediately get that stuff. So it's kind of interesting. I like that. I like prized.
So I think prized power is a good way to segue over to Defiance, right? I think so.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
So that's our other agenda. One of you guys want to lay that text on us real quick?
Daryl's got
Defiance.
It.
Defiance. Yeah. Defiance says your plot deck must contain exactly 10 plots, and all of your plots gain prized 1.
While moving to your used pile.
While moving to your used pile, yes.
Yeah. So this one seems awfully interesting. There's some flexibility there, but I personally felt like I couldn't quite figure out exactly what to do with it. And I know Mr. John Bruno is pretty renowned in the community for his plot choices. I thought maybe we'd see if he wanted to work with us on putting together a Defiance deck for the podcast.
Yeah, I have a couple ideas with it. I mean, I think maybe some people might feel like the obvious ones would be, now that we have so many city plots or river plots, I mean, you can have a bunch of them in your deck to trigger each other at the right time when you need them, so you can stretch that a little bit more, where it still gives you the chance. Like, right now, here's what I feel. My deck that I played at Worlds, the Lannister deck, you know, I worked on with some other people. Alvaro played the deck, you know, and we had the same plots. You're running 5 city plots. Once you run 5 city plots, you kind of have no other choice to play but to play Valor. That gives you one possible other plot. And most people were playing Cersei Skeens, which we did, you know, as a 7th plot. Mm-hmm. Well, now when you have the Defiance plot possibility. You get to add three more in. I mean, it'd be nice to have March to the Wall when you need it, or Fleeing to the Wall when you need it. When you think of those other three kind of like as sideboard plots, that's where it gets pretty good, where it gives you that opportunity. The decks that I think are going to be really good are right now with Martell, with Ariane, to be able to use some kind of plot manipulation. They even got Scheming in the Sand. You could throw Macers in there and use the Citadel Law event.
Yep.
Just to go through and use your plot manipulation. It is possible.
They've got the Rookery, too.
The Rookeries are amazing, too. I love the Rookeries. Even, you know, the Veil Rookery is really good, too. So just being able to have those cards to let you go through plots. I mean, I played Martell Knights of the Hollow Hill with River Plots at a store championship 2 weeks ago. And I was able to, like, I remember one game I had where my opponent was on their seventh plot, and I was already on my 13th. And the only card I had for plot manipulation was Ariane. I just played her six times. So there's lots of ways to go through plot manipulation, which, again, I think if you use the plot manipulation with city and river plots, that could be a really fun build also. And then my final idea is I played in the past, last year I played, like if you're playing any kind of Baratheon Rush, Lannister Rush, if you're using Power Behind the Throne, but you would make it a Defiance deck instead. Any of those kind of plots where you never really wanted to play Valor. The Martell Maester deck that I played at Gen Con 2 years ago was more of a Rush build. You pretty much figure, you know, if you're not winning by the fourth or fifth plot, you're probably going to lose anyway. So you may not want to have Valor as a plot in there because you don't really need it. So this way, with a Rush build, you can actually have those extra plots you need when you need it. You have your Valor when you need it, or a Wildfire when you need it. You can play a second copy of Power of Blood. You can play Art of Seduction and not need it for a while. You can play, you know, Forgotten Plans. It's come back. There's all those great utility plots. Fortified Position. Just to have a sideboard of plots to be able to pull out when you need it, when you might not have had room to put it in your deck in the first place, it's pretty solid.
I think all three of those seem pretty reasonable, and I had definitely thought about those last two choices for sure. Though I'm kind of curious, about trading through city and river plots. Like at first I thought that sounded cool, and I wound up building a conquest deck to try that out, but that's a different story. But I did that because I was a little worried about donating that power to my opponent every turn. Do you think that could be an issue if you're revealing plots at double the speed of your opponent, that giving away that much power might bite you in the butt?
What if I'm playing a river plot deck and I have Cross and the Ruby Ford? The time I play it, you lose a power, it equals it out. I play another river plot, I trigger that one, you know, you get to lose a power. If I want to play the 101 that gives me 2 gold and lets me trigger any of the ones down below, I can make you lose a power that way. I can play Floodwaters if I wanted to trigger that one again. I really don't think that's going to be that bad, especially if you have any kind of rush deck, too, if you were playing a rush deck. Forget about the plot manipulation in a minute. But if you're doing some kind of rush deck where you actually have – you want power in your opponent's house. I mean, that's – you know, it's pretty good to be able to just deal that power on a particular turn.
Yeah, it definitely in a rush deck, I thought that power is probably more likely to be a boon than a detriment.
Yeah. The one I've really been thinking about a lot was with the Martell plot manipulation, and I had River Plots and Crossing Ruby Ford. So I've really been enjoying playing the River Plots.
Yeah, I tweaked my Targ deck. I'd been running, I think, three or four in there for a while, and then I hadn't played the Targ deck in a few months. And this last weekend, I tweaked it and added Crossing the Mummer's Ford and such and Floodwaters to it, and wow. River Plots are pretty good now.
Yes, they are.
I think River Plots have had a lot of utility to them for a while now. I mean, we were talking about, me and Ben were talking about Floodwaters today, and how underplayed that event is. And I had a Lanny Hollow Hill deck built that would just keep hopping the one where you return a guy to the top of your deck.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Shores of Nysar?
No, at the Palace of Sorrows.
At the Palace of Sorrows, and just do it with Qyburn, and do it in between that and Floodwaters just play him over and over and over and over again each turn. And, I mean, there's so much utility, and people go, oh, now we can copy the draw effect. Well, yes, or one of the many other things. I mean, that event is what I think makes River so abusable. Their abilities by themselves aren't necessarily that great, but if you're triggering two of them and copying a third every round, like, that can lead to a massive change in the game state.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I played that Martell Knights of the Hall of Hill deck that I played 2 weeks ago at the store championship. So I went undefeated on the day with the deck, and I actually had three games against Greyjoy, which I figured would be the toughest matchup, where one game my opponent had 13 power, another game at 14, another game at 14. If I didn't have Cross and Ruby Ford and being able to trigger it three times in that game, you know, I could have lost those games. But just the flexibility you have with At the Palace of Sorrows, Shores of Nysor, those are all giving you cards. And I didn't even play Cross and Mummers Ford because it wasn't legal for that tournament yet.
Oh, it only gets better.
I know. I mean, I did it this past weekend with a Targaryen, and I came in second. But the Martell deck, just being able to play cards over again like Sarah Zokart varies. I mean, I played against a Lannister player in one game where I used the same copy of varies on turn one, turn two, and turn three. I was able to use Ariane, you know, three straight plot phases in a row with that, because you bring her out, you play March to the Wall, she discards, I get her back, or I had another copy of her, and then I bring her out again, and then I trigger the At the Palace of Sorrows, put on top of the deck, and it gets crazy. I mean, you really can go through a lot of plots, and I mean, that's always been one of my favorite aspects of the game, is plot manipulation, and it's kind of fun to see that coming back again.
Okay, so my hearing then, the general vibe is that we all want to go with Martell at the moment. Go the plot and direction.
Seems cliche, but sure, why not?
Okay. I mean, I still think that the Rush deck may be the better build, just because you are giving up less power in general, right? I mean, the Martell, like you said, the plot manipulation, where you're giving them so many powers. Well, if you are doing the River one, you are taking some power away. If I was going to do a lot of plot manipulation with it and run through some decks, I might want to run a couple more two-claim plots just so that I can take some extra power off their house if they had it. I mean, it would be fun to do like a plot manipulation one time and go into like focused offense just to take three. If your opponent did have a lot of power, you could play Littlefinger, the new Shadows one, which is actually pretty strong. I had that in my Martell deck, and I was able to bring him out of Shadows for free in a few games, and having an extra claim from him was pretty strong, too. So there are ways to work around it.
If this is a vote, my vote is for Rush, just because I remember it wasn't even that many weeks ago, we had a big debate on here about if Rush was dead. And so to say, you know what, it's not only not dead, but it is alive and kicking, and here's a cool way to do it that's much different than Rush builds have been in the past before this agenda, seems cool to me.
Should it be Rush, or, you know, I had also been thinking about taking it possibly in a more aggro direction that wants to have answers. Maybe that sounds more control-y, but I was thinking about Stark, who can put, you know, a lot of pressure on, but they also have a lot of the best just, like, answer cards in the game, and having those 10 plots available, you know, gives you that potential sideboard range to have even more answer cards.
Right. No, that's definitely true. That's a really good point, too. I mean, just if you play the plot deck as, even if you're not doing plot manipulation, you can still play it as a control deck or just a regular solid build deck where you have, I mean, because in general, don't you feel like you want to win most games by the sixth or seventh plot anyway?
Yeah.
So, yeah, of course.
Yeah, right? Not a lot of guys are going to bank on, you know, going through 10 plots, you know,
right,
normally it's within 7.
So this way, if you get to hold 3-4 plots back, fine. You just get to pick and choose the ones you want. And that's where it's going to – that doesn't necessarily have to be a Rush deck. That could just be a solid deck. I mean,
right.
I guess lots of good decks using that just to have the sideboard of plots to be able to use.
Exactly. And this was my thinking, is that I don't know if it's necessarily going to be just Rush decks or just control. I think it's really going to be those tempo decks, those mid-range decks, those decks that have a nice little balance between aggressive and control elements, having the answers. You know, more often than not, I find myself wanting to put a copy of March to the Wall in my deck, in my plot deck, But it doesn't always fit in there.
Yeah.
But with this, now you can always have it. You can always have that answer to that lone bastard character they have out there. So this might see more play than I had originally thought it would, just because now you don't have to make those hard cuts. You do have to make the right decision when it comes to when you plan your Valor so that you'll make sure to, you know, that'll come around again. And maybe you're not even running a deck that necessarily runs a lot of plot cycling. You know, maybe it's just about having the answer when you need it. I think the toughest thing is going to be the restricted list and the plots on that. I think that's going to be the toughest part of it.
Sure. Very true. I mean, I think that if you want to have, I don't know, you have to decide in terms of restricted card. Do you want your restricted card to be a plot then if you're running a 10-card plot deck? I mean, I felt,
I would lean towards no, but I don't know.
I was thinking about comparing it with the Long Voyage. When I played the Long Voyage last year, and obviously Long Voyage was going crazy last year, but whenever I built the Long Voyage deck, I pretty much wanted my restricted card to be a plot, just because I knew I could get it. Even if I was running a character or something, and I ran three copies of it, an 85-card deck, you're not guaranteed to get it. So, you know, I wanted my TLV decks to have the restricted card be a plot, so I knew I could play it when I needed it. How do I feel about that in terms of, you know, now I have a 10-card plot deck. Do I want my restricted card to be a plot? That's going to be something you have to think about, too. I guess it really depends on how good that utility plot is.
Yeah. Right. I don't know. In some ways, that's a good point. This is kind of a reverse of TLV.
Yep. In a way. I mean, with the plot deck, you will get to choose every round, whereas, you know, with a 85-card deck, you don't necessarily get to pick and choose your cards, you know, as you play them, but I see where you're coming from with that.
Yep.
Okay, so we need to make a final decision on that before we move forward.
Well, I'm going to say it's the tempo decks. I don't know if that was a choice, but that is a real and true archetype, is the tempo deck, and I think that's the one that's going to play it the most.
I agree.
Okay.
I think that's going to be the best deck for it, for this kind of build.
Just that aggressive deck with the nice hints of control when needed.
Okay. I like it. So which house should we do for that? I would personally lean towards Stark, but I'm open to other options.
Yeah, you know, I think that Lannister could get quite a bit out of it. Quite a bit out of it, especially with some of the cards coming out for it that allow them to mess around with the plot deck.
What I think might be fun would be to look at, just kind of lay out every single house and look at their house blank only plots. Because sometimes those are the ones that, I mean, you want to put in, but you don't get to play all the time. Like, take a Greyjoy deck where you have, you know, Rise of the Crack and you're sitting there at 1-2. There are times you want to play that, and because your opponent doesn't have much, you know you're going to get the unopposed, you got a nice two claim, high initiative. Then there's sometimes when you're forced to play it because it's your fifth or sixth plot, seventh plot, you got to play it at that point because you had to play it, and the board really didn't present itself, or you needed the gold. So that would be a great plot to have in your bank, your sideboard plots if you're playing Greyjoy. I think Greyjoy has some really good plots that way that make me – I mean, Victorian Schemes I think is a good one. I mean, you might want to use that every once in a while. Just I think you might want to look at each house and say, oh, what are their house-only plots? And that's the one I might want to have build a deck around, a plot deck around, and try building a deck for the match of that agenda.
That's not a bad idea. So you're thinking Greyjoy, huh?
Greyjoy is the first one that popped into my head because I think they are a deck that can win from 4 to 6 turns in general. And would you have, you know, like this, the Rise of the Kraken is a great one, but you could put a couple other two claimers in there if you need them. You could even play as a winter build. Now you're not playing the winter agenda, but it's like Raven, where you can put a Time for Ravens as one of your bank ones if you wanted to get it, but if you drew it, then I don't need a Time for Ravens. I can save that for later on. Winds of Winter, same thing. Winter Festival, same thing. You don't necessarily have to play them right away. Just save them in your bank for when you need them. So I think if I was building a Greyjoy deck with Winter, that could be kind of fun to do. You can even throw in cards like Building Orders or Building Season and Summoning Season if you needed them. You don't have to use those right away. I mean, just as a suggestion, you know?
Right.
Okay. That sounds good. I like that.
I'm willing to go with it.
Okay, so it's going to be a Greyjoy Defiance deck.
That kind of cares if it's winner, but not really.
Right, exactly.
Now, really fast, this is kind of off topic. Really, really quick as a side note here. Is the prized keyword, is that a may or is that a must?
No, it's a must. You have to do that.
So Brotherhood is fucked again, is what we're saying.
No, because I believe Brotherhood says you cannot put it on your house.
Does it?
I'm pretty sure that's the way it works.
Let me read the...
I know that maybe so it's a power that you would claim for your house, you would claim on a character. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
So
you cannot put it on your house card.
Okay, I'm just making sure.
Because a character with infamy can still put it on them.
Right.
Ah, that's a good point. Okay.
So there's that.
So there is that. I'm just making sure, okay? That was just going through my head a little bit as we were talking about this.
And then you're like, hey, I want to put it all in your barrack and then let me play Cold Hands.
Man, I'll always have a soft spot for Brotherhood. I think that everyone who plays the game likes Brotherhood. I think everybody has a soft spot for those guys.
No, they don't.
You don't?
Yeah.
Why?
No,
why?
I hate it.
Ask Will how our Brotherhood matchup was at Gen Con a few years back. But.
I don't even remember now. I assume I lost, but I don't remember exactly what happened.
Well, let's just say at the end of the game, I remember that you had no cards in hand, no locations on the table, but Barrack was still in play.
Nice. So that was actually very similar to the game we had at Worlds this last year.
Yeah, probably.
Nice.
It was like back when I did, like, you know, first turn you played Flea Bottom Scavenger, I played Fear of Winter, then the next turn I played Roll by Decree, and it was kind of downhill from there.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, Barrack's a fun one to target with Cold Hands for sure. Just let you put all the power on him, then I'll use Cold Hands to send him away.
Okay, so back to the deck we're working on here then.
Yes.
Yep.
Okay, so do we want to start by going ahead and picking out those 10 plots? Do we have just a few we want to go ahead and nail down? Or do we want to roll with the draw deck?
I mean, obviously you throw Valor in right away, and there's no Greyjoy deck that's not going to play Valor, so you can start throwing that one in first. That's the obvious build, right?
Yep, that seems pretty obvious right there.
There's plot number one. If we're going to go with the Winter build, then you throw in A Time for Ravens and the Winds of Winter. That's what I would throw into both of those plots.
Both of those sound reasonable. Searching them up to get them added right now. Now, you'd mentioned Rise of the Kraken a moment ago.
Yeah.
That seems like a pretty solid idea as well. I like having a little more claim at our fingertips and a good way to close out the game.
Let's see. What other good... Let's see what we might use as our restricted card. Because Greyjoy doesn't have tons of... I mean, you got Asha as a restricted card. I don't know. I mean, personally, I'm a big fan of the new Asha. I really like the new 4-cost one that potentially can be CBK, has, you know, the all three icons. I can use Naval for all three. That just makes me feel like I might want to use a plot as my restricted card.
Huh.
If I went with the 4-cost Asha versus the 3-cost one.
My vote's Fear Winner.
Again.
Especially with the flexibility of being able to play it whenever you want.
Yep.
Yeah, and more claim, you know, and if we can push through some 2-claim power challenges, we can negate the power we're giving to them pretty well. Yeah.
And everyone's loving Hollow Hill right now.
Yep, I like Fair Winter. I think that's a good call. This way you don't have to start off, you don't have to play with it. I mean, you could always play, you know, you could always put in Forgotten Plans too, but, you know, just because it's a good utility one, because if you have all your little dudes out, you know, you don't want to have somebody play First Note Winter. You know, that card blows anyway, so why play that card? And
yeah, what kind of an idiot came up with that concept? A plot that gets rid of weenies?
I haven't just played weenies. I haven't even played my own plot in a deck in probably like a year.
Wow.
I agree with that. With where the game's at, it's probably not the ideal choice right now. Yeah. A lot of big fatties out there.
For sure.
Mm.
Okay, so I've got five plots at the moment that I'm showing. Is that what you guys are showing?
Yeah.
Well, I was. I feel like it all just disappeared.
What about you guys like Winter Festival?
Stick a copy in, sure. It's hard to say it right now, but Red Wedding might be a cool way to go.
That's another good utility plot. That's another really good utility plot. I mean, how many times have you had that in your deck thinking, you know, I got these lords, I got these ladies, I'm going to be able to get some power out of it, and then you have to play it because you need the gold and there's nobody to kill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so it's so good when it goes off. Like, first turn, drop Quentin, and they drop Cersei. I mean, you can end the game in one plot.
Yeah. You can hold that back. I mean, that's definitely a game-winning possibility in that. I mean, it's like, so you love a card like that, Winter Festival. Those are great cards to play to win your game. I mean, Stark even has, you know, their Dominus Winner, I forget what that's called right now. I'm drawing a blank.
Minstrel's Muse.
Thank you. Minstrel's Muse. I love that card. Good card.
Oh, yeah. That's a good card. It gets cut from a fair amount of my Stark decks. Not everyone, but, man, if you're running Defiance, you can absolutely have a place for it.
How about this one, which could be, it seems kind of crazy, I mean, to play it because as a two-claimer, to use it as a two-claimer. But it is another good plot, the utility one. And again, we're just throwing some ideas out there. We can reject this one later on. What about Feast or Famine?
I was about to say, that'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, I hate that plot.
I don't know, man.
Right? But there's going to be times you say, I got enough stuff on the table. Let's use the claim now.
I mean, has to be a better two-claim plot in that. You know, contact.
But what if you're desperate for the gold? You're way behind, or you've made a winner and you've kind of choked yourself out and you just need to get back in.
I mean, what about Twist of Fate? It gives you the 5 gold and the claim.
Love that.
Well, winner.
I love Twist of Fate.
Oh, wait, Twist of Fate. I'm sorry. Yeah, we can absolutely run that. That's a dope-ass card.
Twist of Fate? Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah, I mean, it's the one where they get to choose their claim at you when they're...
Oh, yeah. That card,
I don't know. I've seen that card cost people games.
Can we do Artist Seduction?
All by themselves.
Are we not going to roll with that?
I don't know if that makes sense. I don't know what you'd want to pin, necessarily, with Greyjoy going.
I mean, you're always trying to pin Valor.
but even if
you don't, you still... I mean, it just allows you to... kind of assess the situation and pick from your plethora of plots at that point. Or the double P, as I call it. I mean, it's hard not to put that card in every deck.
No, it's not.
Really?
Really.
And Artist Seduction is the tits. Don't even get me started.
It has its place in time, but I don't think every deck is... It's hard.
Just about every deck could benefit from it. It's real good.
I mean, it does really take people by surprise. I do have to admit that much.
Bruno, what are your thoughts on that?
I love it, but I don't think I'd put it in my 10 boss for this.
Really?
Yeah.
Speaking of, since I lost all my plots for a moment there and had to start over, how many should we have at the moment? I think I've got the right ones, but I'm not dead certain.
I was still catching up.
You lost me at hello.
Okay. So I was the only one building the deck at the same time.
I'm trying to navigate.
I'm pulling it up now. Okay, I'm up now. I'll build
Winter
the
Festival,
draw
Fear
deck.
Of Winter and Twist of Fate.
Okay.
Wow. Okay, Daryl.
I need to add some cards here.
Well, thankfully, Card Game DB is back up.
Valor? So. I think Valor was there.
Valor
I have
definitely.
Fear of Winter, Valor, Forgotten Plans, Rise of the Kraken, The Winds of Winter, A Time of Ravens, and the Red Wedding.
Red Winter Festival, do we get that in?
I can sure add it.
What about March to the Wall?
Because sometimes it's not necessarily an impactful plot, and sometimes I feel silly running it for the 2 power, but if you just keep it in your back pocket until you're at 13, that's money.
Yeah. I'm really with Daryl on March to the Wall.
Yeah, me too.
I think that's money lately.
There's hardly any deck that I played I don't have that in.
That puts us at
so good.
9. You know what I think is really an underplayed plot at the moment? Not March to the Wall. That kind of is sometimes, but I was actually meaning Fleeing to the Wall.
Yeah, Fleeing to the Wall.
That'd be good.
So wait, so we're not putting Valar Morghulis in this? Is that what we're...
Yes, we did. It was the first plot we added.
Okay.
Personally, I don't think I'm going to play Fleeing in this deck, because with Gravesley, with all their new Good Brother dudes, you want to have lots of locations. With the little one-cost guy, Dampier's Drowned, or whatever those guys are, Dampier's Faithful, whatever those new guys are, that when one cost, you know, one strength, they get an extra strength when you have an entry icon when you have more locations. If I have Valen and it's Winter, I can may have the Renown to give my guys extra strength. So I don't know if I'd want to play Fleeing in this deck. I'd rather play some other good control cards in this deck. You could play, I'd rather even play Attack from the Sea over Fleeing to the Wall. I'd rather even play, to be honest, Dry Season over some
Dry
of the
Season.
Dry Season would probably be a really solid call here, especially if you're doing Winter, so you got some soft choke going on.
Yeah.
Dry Season may be a good play.
It plays into, you know, that kind of high claim theme.
I had a Greyjoy deck, which was really solid. I was Greyjoy Winter I was playing, and I had as my plots, I had, you know, Fear of Winter to slow somebody down. Then I would come back with Attack from the Sea and Dry Season. And while those are all great, you had to be careful because all those, you know, they kind of screw with your Iron Mines. So you have to be careful when your opponent Valored. So by having a few more of those location screw over cards and being able to hold it back for when you think it's a good time to be able to play it, that's pretty solid to have that available too.
Yeah, post-Valor, that kind of thing can just wreck an opponent's day. They Valor, they're low on gold, next plot they drop might be something big, hoping to come back in, dropping Dry Season there could be huge.
Yeah.
Yep.
Or potentially Blockade, if we really want to, you know, play up a choke theme, too. I don't know.
Sure. I like that idea. We're throwing a whole bunch out right now. We can decide which ones we want to use.
There's so many plots.
Yeah.
There's one I like to play that doesn't get to see a lot of play, but I like Relentless Persecution. It depends how many uniques you're going to have in your deck, but I really like that plot. Does not see enough play. We don't have to put it in this one, but...
Yeah, it may not work out for this deck, just because you are going to be playing some of those non-uniques, but not a lot. But I would also say, too, that when you're building this deck, the thing that I do... is I normally start off building a plot deck a lot of times before I actually build a real deck. So it's kind of fun to do this now. We're throwing these decks out here. And then from here, we decide what to put in our deck. Because now we know how much we can spend on characters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We probably want a fairly low curve looking at the kind of plots that I pulled that we've been talking about here.
Yep.
Okay, well, should we flip over for the moment then and start looking at that actual draw deck?
Sure.
Okay, so I know that John had just mentioned the Greyjoy Holy Guy that needs more locations that I'm forgetting the name of.
It's Dampier's Drowned or Dampier's... all the Good Brothers. I want to add all those guys in.
Yeah, Dampier's Drowned. That seems really reasonable. He's super efficient, especially when you're up on locations. And the Good Brothers.
Gran and Graydon.
There's three, I think. And Gorold and Gormont. Yeah, there's Gorold. Four. Yeah. Though
you
I think one of
them
is the father.
Gormont
is
the one that saves
discarded card. Yep.
Yeah. Gormont is the one that saves location. The only save location. He's got injury on him. Mm-hmm. Then you have Gran, who's the one that can't be killed or discarded if you have more locations. You got Graydon, which is the one that's zero cost and stays out on the table for as long as you have more locations. And then Gorold is the one that you pitch a card to kneel location. And he's actually probably, I'd say, very underutilized because there's so many ways you can use him just to screw somebody over on locations.
Yeah, I think he's definitely my favorite out of those Bannermen, the new ones that we got.
Yeah. I've been playing a Greyjoy Dampier deck a lot, and, I mean, Gran is a real stud, the one that can't be killed if you have more locations, can't be killed or discarded. He's a stud, but Gorold is probably the sneaky surprise guy that people don't expect to be as good as he is.
Yeah. Killed or discarded is pretty huge. Been playing a few games against Xylor on Octagon over the last couple weeks, and he's been playing Greyjoy Old Way, of course, with Naval Escorts, and he gets Gran on the board ASAP. And then I realized in that game, oh, hey, wait a minute. I'm never going to be able to have those Escorts auto-discard with their own ability because Gran will always be on the board. So, yeah, just an interesting thought. You know, should we want to play naval escorts?
Right.
Good to know.
I mean, do we want to stick with just one of each of the good brothers at the moment and three of those drowned?
Yeah, I would play one of each of the good brothers.
Yeah.
The drowns are really good. I only like to play two of those guys. I mean, they're pretty good, but I could play three. It depends. You have to look at your cost, how many boatswains you're going to play, how many of these guys you're going to play, how many of any other, like if you're going to play any ravens, because you have to play some ravens because you want to protect your winter, if we're going to go winter. So, I mean, while it's nice to have a lot of one-cost guys in there to help you with the flop, you don't want to have too many. Like, I might go with just two of the Dampier's Drown and maybe two of the boatswains and two ravens just to not have too many little guys.
Yeah, it kind of depends. You know, the boatswains or bosuns, for Dodd, if he's listening,
yes,
maybe are not real great at the moment because Shadows right. is still all over the place.
True that, yeah. Then King's Law should be a plot, damn it.
You know,
that is a good play.
We could pull it. Good yep. initiative in there, too, if we need it.
Yep. And then when you start looking at some of these Greyjoy plots, some of the ones we selected, I mean, we didn't mention, you know, we didn't mention Victorian schemes, but some of these Greyjoy plots, you start mentioning the 1A2 Rise of the Kraken, Victorian schemes at 7, Twist of Fate is 5, King's Law is 9. You know, Bay of Ice ends up being a good location for draw. You could, you know, there's definitely something you do with the high initiative. You could even go, if you wanted to go, you know, with the Greyjoy Worship that lets you, oh, Grief. You can play a Raider deck if you wanted to. I mean, there's lots of good things you can do with this still. But those are other ideas. We'll stick with this one.
Yeah.
Because my mind's going. It's on now. It's just, I can't turn it off.
Good. That's what we like.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's exactly there's what no, we're looking for here.
So there's like no off on that genius switch. I just can't turn it off.
It's a curse, really, I'm sure.
Exactly.
While we're here, do you want to get the basic winter elements in? So, like he said, two Carrion Birds, probably two Samwells, two White Ravens.
I think those are all pretty solid.
That sounds reasonable. If we're going to bother playing two Samwells, though, I kind of think I would want to bump up to three Carrion Birds. If we're committing to two Sams, that is.
I can agree with that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the way to go with that.
Okay.
I'm ready for them to print a new Samwell Tarly.
Yeah, hopefully soon.
They should have one where you look at the top four cards of your deck and pick one of those cards in your hand and put it back in and shuffle back in. Put the rearrange the top four any way you want and give Sam an entry icon.
You mean Toman?
No, it's the old Sam Tarly. Remember from...
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I just had to laugh
right.
when
but
I
that's
saw
what,
that.
That's what the new Tom has become, right?
Yeah. As long as it's summer, anyway.
Yeah.
So we're looking at then some of the winter tech. So should we look at some of the other? I mean, that's kind of the standard winter package. But should we be looking at some of the other actual stuff that needs it to be winter, and whether it's worth or
like
which
the
of
the Marauders?
Marauders.
Basically the Marauders.
Hell yeah, we need those guys.
How many copies of the Marauders? How hard do we want to push that?
My vote's 3. There's not a downside to them, and 3 for 3 Army Warcrest, Ironborn seems pretty solid.
Yeah, it would be a downside if people still played Summer, but
not
yeah, there's
like
not
that.
Really. Yeah, I don't know a reason to not play 3X of the Marauders, but maybe somebody could prove me differently, but man, this is one of the best cards in the game.
I pretty much just the way I play. I mean, I hate having. I don't always play 3 of it. Sometimes I just
really,
play, yeah. But let's go with 3 because we're really focusing on the winter stuff here. So let's go with 3.
Okay.
Well, I'd like to know the rationale behind only playing 2. You really think they're just there? There's times when you don't want to see the Marauders.
No, the reason is that when I play, this is just the winter deck that I usually play. When I play my Greyjoy winter deck, even when I was playing the one that, you know, I went to Gen Con with 2 years ago, I usually only play two of it because I try to play the deck as if it's winter, great, and if it's not, that's okay. Greyjoy has so many great characters now. I mean, look at all these Good Brothers that actually have an injury icon. They have, you know, now you have the Reader, you have Carl the Mage, you have good characters who have intrigue now, too, that Greyjoy didn't have in their deck before. And I would much rather put some more unique characters over a non-unique character. And if I don't want to necessarily commit to where it has to be winter. So that's why I'd even be iffy on Sam being in the deck. If he's in there, great. If not, would I rather have two copies of Sam and a third White Raven, or a Carrion Bird, sorry, or would I rather play, in place of those, just three better characters?
Right.
He raises many good points.
I still think Carrion Birds are great one-drops. I mean, as far as better characters go, but...
Right, yeah. Well, Samwell's always been one of those, you know, it's a great payoff, you know, if you can use him. It can kind of suck if you don't get anything out of it.
Yeah, I hate when I get him later on after I've already played my birds, you know?
Yeah. He's usually a one of in my seasonal decks, because he's just the pits when you draw one after you've, you know, killed him for one reason or another, since he's just a you know, one strength guy with no icons.
Exactly.
Right. And I mean, we'll have Longship Iron Victory, I assume, which is plenty good draw on its own.
All right, fine. We'll reverse the decision. Drop a Tarly and a bird.
I mean, I'd actually rather even have maybe even Bay of Ice. If I'm running the Kings Road Fiefdom, which I'm definitely going to run those, that gives me extra initiative. The Bay of Ice gives me extra initiative. My plots are pretty high initiative in general. I may actually just play Bay of Ice and the deck and not even worry about Sam.
Are you wanting to run the King's Road Fiefdom or the King's Road?
King's Road.
Sorry, the King's Road, the Winter King's
okay.
Road.
I didn't know if maybe you had some influence thoughts up your sleeve here.
Yeah, no influence thoughts, just I misspoke.
Yeah, I think three of the King's Road is a slam dunk.
Absolutely.
Not limited, nice stat boost, gives us gold, and has the possible upside if it's winter.
So, Will, I'm currently sitting at 21 cards, 13 characters, 6 locations, 2 attachments.
Have you added the bay already?
Yeah, I've got my locations are the King's Road, the Bay of Ice, 2 birds, and then characters are 1 of each Good Brother, 2 Carrion, 2 Damfares Drowned, 2 Boatswain, 3 Marauders. But we should probably drop that to 2 if we're pushing the we don't really care if it's winter theme.
How many Bay of Ice did you put in, Kyle?
3.
3?
We can go down to 2.
Yeah, I like 2.
2? Okay, I think I'm off a little bit more. Sorry, I was trying to get the bays added. So drop down to 2 drowned?
No, 2 bait, yeah, 2 drowned, 2 boatswain, 2 birds.
Oh,
2 of each of the 1 drops.
I didn't have any boatswains in. I'm with the shadows state of things, I don't know if I'm feeling them at the moment.
Hey, if you're forcing them to keep their cards in shadows, that's fine. I'll keep 2 dudes pinned. 4
yeah,
more with
I think.
Clap.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. Like, it's a low risk, great reward with the boatswain at this point.
Okay. Well, I've got them in, so now I'm matching.
Unless you're playing against Targ Dragon Pit, then you're SOL.
Yeah. Which is so gonna be so good right now. I have one built that just makes me drool.
Absolutely. They're like, yeah, I'll just keep 5 cards in shadows. That's cool.
Well, Aegon.
Aegon, yeah, the new Aegon. Yeah, he's money. Yeah,
I'm just gonna blink everything that's 3 strength off the board on my threat turn. Don't mind me.
Yeah.
Man, I wish I was coming to game night this Saturday.
And
I
just
would,
discards
totally
him so
you
can
that.
Play him again.
Yeah.
Lol. Anywho.
So are there any other winter cards that are worth touching on? I know John had mentioned Balin and Passing earlier. He doesn't have any downside, really, if it's, you know, summer or no season. He's still 4/3, Bicon with Renown and a Crest. Is that
right?
Is that good
still
enough?
Noble, Renown, yeah. I like it. I would put him in.
We'll drop in a...
I mean, I'm not going to play, because you're playing Winter, you don't want to have too many costly characters. I'm trying not to run anybody who's more than 3 cost. If I'm going to play anybody, I'm going to play the new Asha, and I'm going to play Balin, and that's probably about it.
Yeah.
So should we drop a new copy or a copy of that new Asha in?
Definitely.
Yeah, why not?
Angelina Jolie goes in this deck.
She does look like Angelina Jolie. That's a good point.
Huh. I had never noticed that till you said it. But yeah, kind of does.
So do you want to stick? The only other tech I can think of are the Fishermen, the End of the Kneeling Man, Mance.
I'd be worried about the Fishermen because they just do diddly when it's not winter.
True.
Exactly.
Yeah, they're not. I mean, at that point, we'd have to decide if we were trying to really do choke or not.
True. Right. What about Winter Mance? Are there enough kingdoms out right now that he's worth it?
You know, are being played.
I see a lot of people playing Kingdom of Shadows now because
That's what I was thinking.
So I love Winter Mance. Plus, you got a king. Right. You're not running lots of kings. You would run against a Stannis deck. You want to have a king out there. Having Mance and Balin, is the new Balin actually king? He's not a king, is he?
No, he's a lord and an Ironborn.
Right. So this way, you're gonna have Mance available to at least cancel that king.
And he's lord if we do end up going with Red Wedding as a
true
Balin. Yeah.
Yep.
If the opponent has more power than us, we may have trouble with Asha.
End of the Kneeling Man is the only other one that comes to mind.
Yeah. I would say Chibi on that, only because I got to see how many cheap guys I'm playing at that 2-cost slot, the 2-strength slot.
Yeah, I was going to say, do we have anything that's going to be worth? I mean, it depends if we throw in some of those Maesters that they have and Balin's not on the board.
Right. If we're playing some good claim in here. If we're running those, I mean, when you start throwing in characters, as a 4-cost, I'd play Victarion. I would go with the new Theon. I just love that new Theon.
Yeah, I was going to ask which Theon we ought to go with.
Yeah, I think
we ought to look at the winner new.
And then you got to start throwing your save guys like Makaro and Windermere and your save locations like your Iron Mines and your Iron Cliffs and decide how many of those. Sorry, I don't mean to throw those all at you at once, but we'll just talk, just for us to talk about those, which ones to put in. And how many?
Yeah. Well, I think maybe let's start with Theon, because that was going to be my next question, because I was looking at the Winter Theon. I'm totally good with the new one. I was going to ask, which direction we ought to go there. Is he just a one-of, or is he something that we want to see more often than that? He is one of those splashy abilities, but I'm not sure which way we want to view him in this deck.
I'd play him as a one-of. I would. I don't know. Would you say that?
See, if we're trying to go with more aggressive and get our murder on, throw some more Warcrest, do some Die by the Sword action, then I would say why not run more Theon, try to get the jump off him early. It depends where we want to go with the deck at this point.
Yeah, I think it depends on what you decide you want to do event-wise. Do we want to put our event slots for Price of War, Die by the Sword, or do we want to put our event slots on control, cancel sort of things, where I'm going to maybe use some saves, I might use some finger dancers, I might use to be a Kraken. I actually think I would like to have a military battle in one of my plots.
Okay.
I agree with the more control route. That's just me.
Yeah, I mean, we do have a lot of claim potentially in the plots that we pulled earlier.
Right.
That might handle some of the challenge-based stuff more than the events.
All right, let's toss one in then.
Yeah, the new Theon's bonkers. I like him a lot.
He's super good.
So one of
anything that simulates or allows you to actually initiate additional challenges, I think, is super underrated by the majority of the meta. So, you lose two, but it's essentially you win an opposed military challenge every marshaling.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
All right.
Okay. And then after that, I think John had mentioned the two big save guys, Windermere and Makaro. And
yeah,
I think
definitely.
I am all for a copy of each of them.
Certainly.
I pretty much never see a downside to that.
Makaro's great. If Burn's going to be coming back with Aegon and stuff, that's really a concern. He's pretty much your only save for Burn.
Mm-hmm. Well, unless we wanted to do Risen from the Sea, if we're kind of worried about
that burn and such, do we run a couple copies of Risen?
Perhaps.
I think I would. I would. If you're going to have Theon, too, if you want to kill somebody, just to, you know, just to have your extra saves, because you're going to have to kill people, too. So if you don't have Makar, you don't have, and there's somebody you want to keep around, no reason not to have a couple saves in there.
Yeah. And it is a surprise, which is always nice. You know, if your opponent's really counting on getting somebody out of the way for one reason or another, and then you can save them when they were not expecting it, it's just demoralizing on their end.
Yep.
Okay.
Two Bandit Lords?
Yeah,
or
yeah.
Or Nilfgaard Lords?
That sounds very reasonable.
Yeah, I like two. That's a good idea.
There's at least... My thought is whenever running two of something is a card that you really, really, really want to see at least once sometime in your game.
Right.
But the second time around, you're probably more hesitant. His effect is great because it seems like every house now has one really kick-ass location that concerns you. And the odds are that they're running one ofs, maybe two ofs of it, so you're going to need two ofs to catch your counter. Because it is your only location control at this point.
Yep, I agree with that. And I also think that, you know, that's the good point you made about when you want to see these cards. I think sometimes people who play three of something because, you know, you really want to see it, sometimes I don't play three of a card just because my whole thought always is I never want to play three of a card that I don't want to see in my opening hand. So even though, like, say in Martell, where Prince's Plans is a phenomenal card, there are a lot of games I only have two of it in my deck, just because I don't want to necessarily draw it first turn.
Right.
Yeah. I can always get it back now with Blessed by the Maiden anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll just cycle it infinitely.
How right. Crazy is that?
Yep.
Okay, so let's see, what should be on tap next for this deck?
Our saves package?
Yeah, I was kind of thinking about that. Do we want to look at Iron Mines? We do want some locations on the board. It's great for setup.
I like three Iron Mines and two Iron Cliffs.
You, sir, are a man after my own heart. And the Iron Cliffs going with two is exactly the reason you were saying it's not really something I want to see in that setup hand,
right?
Since it's not
yep.
going to get the tokens.
Exactly. Now, with that being said, I wouldn't mind, and we'll have to look more at our locations, because we are going to run LIV, whether it's one or two. We're going to run, you know, which location, the new Longship Maiden's Bane, got to run that thing. That's just phenomenal, just as a blocker all by itself.
Bruno, we can't run that. Will doesn't think it's a very good card. You can go back to that episode where
You need to ask Zyler, out of the games we've played, how many times he's gotten to use Longship Maiden's Bane against me? You need to ask him.
I don't care, Will. You said that card was bad, and then I said it's going to be called Will's Bane.
It could be bad if you don't run any warships.
In my current Greyjoy build that I have with Dampier, where it's not really in a little bit of winter, but I only have a River Blockade, one River Blockade, two LIVs and one Maiden's Bane. So I only have three warships. But that Maiden's Bane still kicks ass at that, even with those in there.
Well, just the unstealthable, unkillable chump block, it's always there.
That's kind of like, you know, when you have LIV sitting back and you know your opponent knows you can put add two strength in at any time to your challenge. You have Maiden's Bane and one of the warship, just that extra one or two strength that it gives you that you could jump in at any time too, is pretty awesome.
Yeah, threat of activation just gets so... I mean, that's something that seems to be kind of unique to Greyjoy right now, is it's such a huge strength, is they just have this quiet, like, ever-present just dominance that, yeah, you can throw something at them, but you have to account for it. You have to account for five extra strength coming your way at any one time.
Okay. Yep. Couple things, then. Should we go ahead and throw in Longship, a copy of Longship Maiden's Bane?
Yeah, I'd throw one in.
Okay. Now... Yeah. The next thought is, since Kyle mentioned dominance, there's another warship that I really love.
Oh, here comes Captured Cog.
Yeah, and I think I love that card so much.
This meets into what we're building here. We're trying to win initiative. It's
exactly.
A great card for it.
You're playing Bay of Ice. It's another warship to boost the Maiden's Bane. There's no reason not to put in like one, maybe two of those cogs in there.
I'm leaning towards two.
Yeah, I think two is a good number.
And the thing about it is, once you've got one on the board, it's really hard for the opponent to win dominance. Yeah. Once you've got two on the board, they are just not winning dominance ever again. You're winning exactly. It every turn.
Yeah, it's real good.
Now, once we finish, like, you know, we got to fish this out a little more, a number of events. I love playing maybe two copies of Iron Lore, because Iron Lore is so good, it can't be canceled with traditional cancel, like a paper shield, even if I wanted an Iron Mind to come back into play. But it's also fun to be able to bring an Iron Cliffs back into play, because Iron Cliffs does say when it comes into play.
Right.
So it's a nice card. You know, you could always have your own Bandit Lord knock out your Iron Cliffs. And one more other fun thing about Iron Cliffs is there are a lot of people playing River Plots. And that, you know, when they play at the Palace of Sorrows and you have to put a card on top of your deck, once I see somebody playing the River Plots, I will use my Iron Cliffs early because I know they're going to come back to at the Palace of Sorrows.
Oh, right.
And that's the one I'm going to bring back to my deck because I want to be able to use it again for two more gold.
Mm. It's a good play.
Yeah, as soon as I see somebody playing the River Plots, because you know how sometimes when you want to save some of your saves. You know, you don't want to use them right away just to save, like, you know, Bosun. You want to save the little Damper's Drown or whatever. I mean, sometimes you give those guys up and say, I'll kill those because I want to save my saves for later. If somebody's playing a River Plot deck, they're probably playing at the Palace of Sorrows. If you see that right away, give up the give up a save or two on the cliffs because you're going to get it back.
Yeah.
You know, and the nice thing, if you want to use up those saves early, you've got Theon floating around.
That's right.
Deck. If you've got him, all the faster.
Exactly. I like that a lot.
Okay,
let's not forget that City Besieged. I hear that's a good card.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the other reason why you want the Iron Lore. I mean, there are still a lot of City Plot decks. People are playing that. People are still playing Condemned, you know, so that's going to get rid of a location. So it definitely is a great play.
Okay.
So I know we're into the flashy effects right now and the fun cards.
Yeah.
Should we consider looking at boosting our income a little bit at this point?
Yeah, it's probably very good idea.
I mean, well, if you guys want to YOLO it, I mean, we can't.
You do have the King's Road, you know, at least you have the King's Road, but still, you're right. We need to put in gatehouses. You know, we're going to have some nice, good, unique guys who want to play, you know, King's Hall. Or we can't remember King's Hall, sorry. Street of Silk. Street of Silk is a great one to pick for your, you know, when you get your Iron Cliffs out, you know, and they're right. Used up.
Oh, yeah.
Lauren, bring them back in with that, you know.
That's nice for sure. Do we want to look at any of the other streets? I mean, we seem to have a lot of military and power icons at the moment.
Did we want to look at what?
The other streets.
Ah, the other streets.
We seem to have a lot of military and power icons at the moment. I think we could probably do Sisters in Steel if we want.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. So if we're doing Sisters and Steel there, I see that puts us up to, wow, a whopping 20 locations.
Woo!
Pretty high for most of my decks. And let's see, 3, 6, 7, 8, 9 of them are resource locations.
I don't think you should be afraid of run. Did you add a Street of Silk into?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think you should put a Flea Bottom into.
Okay.
Flea Bottom is a great card. I mean, you know, there's a lot of guys you want to put your newly made Lord in. You don't really care about him. He's in there for the effect. Just a couple Chud guys out there to get there. You even put in, you know, the Good Brother guy, you know, that can't be, just to get a guy out. You know, Flea Bottom is a good card.
Okay. That brings us up to an even 10 resource locations.
Yeah.
Is that, do we think that's enough with the kind of lower gold curve that we were kind of looking at with the plots?
Did you put 3 Gatehouse in?
Yes, I did.
Okay. 3 Gatehouse,
jeez,
3
Kings. We still don't have a Longship Iron Victory, and we are at a lot of locations. Right.
Oh, but sorry. You know, no, I do have one LIV in.
But don't be afraid of that. Don't be afraid of that at a great joint.
You need to have a lot of locations for Balin, for the Dampiers drown for That's Gord, true. Your brother. You need to have, you need to put in more locations.
Right.
I feel like, maybe love? Either C's or the, yes, feel like I'm making love.
three C's. Yeah. Let's go three C's. Yeah.
Fuck it. Do it live.
Yeah, either the C's or the, what's it, the Bloody Keep or something. Nah, you're going to make it winner.
No,
you
I like the C's. The zero cost with our lower curve sounds right. really nice to me.
The Bloody Keep, I mean, if you're playing those kind of decks, you know, you're a noob. When I sit across somebody and see them play a Bloody C or the Great Keep or, you know, any of those two cost location ones, I'm like, okay, this will be an easy game.
You heard it here first.
Unless they're playing a Stark deck and they're playing, you know, the Bear Island, it's like, what are you doing playing that card? That's a card I played back in the old days when we had to play that back in Westeros. But now there are so many good cards to play. I mean, the only advantage that has is limited. And true, the time you play it, you get it out. But if you don't want to do something else with it, like the Great Pyramid of Marine, that's a card you play. It reduces to all, but it gives you influence.
Mm-hmm.
I can't see playing, you know, one of those Great Hall cards.
Yeah.
Just my opinion. I don't know much.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that gives us a pretty decent resource base. We're up to 13 now.
That's a pretty good spot for me. Daryl only runs 9 resource cards, but that seems good for me.
Hey, it's how I roll.
Okay. Well, let's see. The character base, I think I have 22. Locations, 24. Still attachments, 2. And events, 4. Does that jive?
Seems good to me.
I like it.
Okay.
You're at 24 locations?
Uh-huh.
I'm at 25. What did I must have added something weird in.
I have...
did you guys run 2 Bay of Ice or 3?
2.
2.
Ah, that's where I did it wrong. All right.
Okay.
Some Iron Fleet Scouts. It helps your character count, and it turns on the Good Brothers.
Thoughts? And their warships.
Yeah.
I don't like them. We have too many locations as it is. So, I mean, I don't think I want to add too many more to them. True, they can become a character, but I'd rather put the slots in now. I mean, I'm not a big fan of the capture cogs. I mean, if I was going to cut locations, I would take those out, but I want to start, let's put more characters in, then we'll see if we have room for more locations.
All right.
Well, you know, there's at least one character here, maybe two, that I think are probably certain additions. Alanis seems like she really ought to go in every Greyjoy.
Oh,
Vader Blacktide?
Yep, that's the other one.
Have we added the Reader and Carl yet?
Yeah.
We have not. But I think both of those sound like perfect ideas.
Yep.
Starts giving us a couple ways. Of course, Alanis and Baylor, if I can spell his name.
All right.
Give us some ways.
Is Wex Pike still worth it?
Shut down.
Wex Pike sucks.
Wow.
Carl
used
Maid
to be
Mike,
all right.
Carl and Maid came along and said, Wex Pike, go away. Same cost, more strength, and I can jump in, and I have a cool effect. Okay, Wex Pike, you're an ally, go away.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, well.
That's what happens when you start sleeping with, you know, Asha.
Boom.
That's true.
Yeah. I mean, I'll show you the Maid. I don't know.
Who was it that was going in along with Carl?
Carl and the Reader.
Reader, there we go.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I want to add Victarion. I just like the extra claim jump I get from him. I like Victarion.
Hell yeah, I love that Victarion.
Victarion, Andric the Smiling.
Dude, I love Andric. He's
Yeah, I think Andric is underplayed right now.
Yep, he's really good.
Like, I don't think, if you haven't really sat there and looked at Andric's ability, you might need to reread that card. Like, he is awesome.
Plus, you got like newly made lords. How many times do you think you're going to steal those locations? I mean, I do that all the time. It's awesome. I love discarding somebody's Iron Throne and then bringing it back with Andric.
Yeah, he's money.
Yep.
Okay, so that puts us at 28 characters, 58 total cards. Just as a
Dagmar Clefjaw. He's going to give us a bonus for dominance, because, and we have all these warships, and he's deadly.
Yep, that seems reasonable.
How do you guys feel? Now, this is a little bit higher cost of a non-unique, but how do you feel about Hammerhorn Raiders?
I love them, but they might be a little too pricey for this because we're not really running enough pure military for this.
Yeah. You're definitely on the cusp there. All right.
Fish Whiskers.
Well, we've got the warships.
Yeah, and if we're going to run to be a Kraken, he's money.
Yep. He's Dick Whiskers in my book. That's what we call him out here. I don't know why.
Dick Whiskers. I don't know, brother.
Yeah.
Okay.
Shitlords,
well, that brings us up to a full 30 characters right now and an even 60-card deck at the moment. Though we've only got 4 events in, and I feel like that's kind of light.
How many? Which events do we have right now?
2 Risen from the Sea and 2 Iron Lore.
Oh, that's not enough. Right. Here's what I would do. Here's my magic number. Okay, the first time I won Worlds in 2005, they had a 64-card deck. When I won in 2012, I had a 63-card deck. I pretty much play 63-card decks all the time now. So I'm going to throw in 3-Finger Dance. Bam, I'm done. If we're not going to play, if we're not running the military battles and we're not going to run to be a Kraken, just run in 3-Finger Dance.
Just run it at 7 events and call it good there?
Yeah, yep. Or we go with 3 to be a Krakens, and now let's put in a military battle plot.
And I like to be a Kraken.
I love that. Even if it gets canceled, your character still stands.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Okay, so if we went that direction with 2 be a Kraken, which military battle would be the best choice?
Battle of Oxcross.
I was about to say that. Yeah, absolutely, Battle of Oxcross.
Yeah,
I mean that's good synergy all the way around. You know, you're gonna win military battles. You're Greyjoy, and if you happen to have that Theon out, I mean that's a do or die situation for them. You could cause your opponent to overcommit. I mean, it just depends. I think the theme of this deck is gonna be flexibility. Even though you have some winter tech in there, and you're gonna have some good flexibility with the Battle of Oxcross.
Yep, I think that's a good call.
Okay, so drop the battle in and go with 3 to be a Kraken rather than Finger Dance.
Yep.
Okay, we're still at 63. Though, plot-wise, I'm now up to 14 plots that we had talked strongly about and not settled on for sure.
I think we should cut 4.
That seems like a good starting point.
Cut what?
I think we should 4. Cut 4 plots.
Okay.
All right, let's do this, Will. Let's do this. Let's go through just name each of the 10. Each of the 14 plots, and we can all say, like, either definitely keep, maybe keep, or cut.
Okay. All right. We'll keep it tally.
All right. Now, this first one here is
your
winner.
You can tell he's a teacher. keep, definitely.
Okay. What was the card?
Your winner.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna go with a maybe.
Yeah, I have to go with a maybe too. I mean, there's definitely some other plots in there that we could go with.
Yeah, of course that is currently using our restricted slot. So
right, so I would actually put Fury of the Kraken maybe over it. That gives me a different military battle.
That's what I had kind of wondered.
Yep, higher initiative if we're running the Bay of Ice.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
More gold to start off with first turn. I got 5 gold, 7 mission first turn if I won. I may not play it first turn. I think it might be a better second turn, especially if you flop Bay of Ice. I mean, if you don't flop Bay of Ice, but you play it on the first turn. If I flop Bay of Ice, I'm playing to play Fury first turn. So I think I'd put the Fury in over Fear.
Now, and let me refresh myself. Who does Fury hit? I'm waiting on it to load. Stark and Targ.
Stark and Targ.
Hmm.
Hitting those damn dragons. Speaking of Krakens hitting those dragons, anyone read the Tyrion chapter that got spoiled?
I no. had not yet.
I don't want to hear about it.
Okay.
No spoilers, bro.
It's just amazing. It's totally amazing. Blew my mind.
Hasn't that been spoiled for a while now?
I don't know.
I've stayed away from all the spoilers so far.
I have too, and then I saw a Tyrion chapter, and I couldn't help myself.
Yeah. It's like, you know, we wait so long for that book to come out, and if I already have read half the book before it comes out, man. You know. I even stayed away from the chapter about Ned, that he was really a faceless man, and that the faceless man really died in his spot, but he's really alive.
Wait a minute. Then how do you know that?
I say it because I just saw it, like, you know, oh, never mind, I won't say it.
It was all over Twitter.
It was all over Twitter, yes.
Hashtag yep. Ned lives.
Yes.
I remember
yes,
that.
Exactly. I think
yep,
Jack.
Sean Bean's really happy.
I follow Jack in the Bar online, so it's like, I follow him on Twitter. He was like, I sent one of my boys, the Faceless Men, down to the dungeon when Varys was down there with Eddard, and we switched places.
Now okay. It makes sense.
Yeah.
It all comes full circle.
How else could they get Sean Bean for only one season?
Right.
Yeah, it's not like that guy doesn't die in everything he's in.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. All right.
So we're dropping Fear of Winter officially and going with Fury?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
How cool is that? Right. When was the last time you saw the Fury ran as a restricted?
It's
been a while. But out of the ones that I've seen, Greyjoy has been the one that I do see.
I'd say sometimes Stark, too. Some people still play for Stark just because they like the To Be a Wolf is awesome.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So after that, then we had Valor Morghulis, which I think is a given still.
Yep.
Yeah, you can't not have it.
Okay. We have Forgotten Plans.
Maybe.
I don't like it. I gotta be honest, I almost never play Forgotten Plans in any plot deck. Just because it's such a hit and miss card, I like to know that my plot card is gonna do something when I play it. If you're running
so many of the popular stuff's a when revealed effect, the rivers, right. The cities.
The city plots, the river plots, I mean, they're kind of really popular right now, like Kyle said, and there's just so many times it's just a dud card.
Okay, that sounds like a drop.
Yeah, I would say it every now and then it can just be just the flavor of the month. It can be the right play, but unfortunately it gets cut more often than not.
Making meta plays tends to scare me, so it's saying I would, unless there was something I was knew was going to bone me super hard. Like if I play Hollow Hill, I think long and hard about it, but other than that, it just doesn't make it for me.
Okay. So next plot then?
Yep.
Rise of the Kraken. I'm still liking it. I think with what we do, closing ability.
Yeah, what we're doing with the deck in a two claimer, high initiative, I think we keep it too. I mean, this is kind of one of the reasons why we're going to run Defiance anyway, to have these great utility plot ones that we don't necessarily have to play at a particular time.
Yep.
Okay. Next up, Winds of Winter. I think I lean towards keeping it as well.
I think it's a maybe. I think that we could afford to cut it. It depends on what else we're looking at.
I'm going to go with maybe also.
Yeah, let's look at where we're at. Let's come back to this one.
Okay.
Because you do get 10 slots. I mean, the bar on what a plot needs to be to make the cut is different than in a normal 7. So I'm struggling with where that line needs to be with this.
Right. Okay, well, we'll table that one for now and move to the next one. I have Time of Ravens, which for the winter theme seems like a must.
Yeah, we're running Carrion Birds too if we need to get, so we definitely got to run it.
Yeah.
Yeah, go get a bird. All the birds.
Plus, it's nice to be able to have and use later on or not at all. You know, because there's times when you draw that white raven, then you're like, okay, what am I going to do with this card? Go get a Carrion Bird?
Yeah.
Okay. So the next one up I've got is Red Wedding. And I'm kind of feeling a maybe on that right now.
What's our count at?
If I'm looking at this right, I think we have four lords. Oh, wait a minute. Nope, sorry. I did not scroll all the way down. Newly Made Lord makes six. And is Victorian seven. And Dagmar makes eight. Andric makes nine. Okay, so nine lords.
My gut says yes.
And then two ladies. The yep. one yeah. Asha and the one Alanis.
Keep it.
My gut says cut.
Oh.
I'll just tell you why. Because you know where this card is better at? This card, the Red Wedding's better when you run a lot of ladies in your deck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's more lords running around.
Right, because there's lord. Every deck has lords in it. Not every deck is really running enough ladies. And with you're going to have Asha potentially being a lady that can't die. She may not even get to be selected.
All right.
And I don't want Alana to die.
Yeah.
We're running enough lords that it's possible that both of those characters are going to be on our side.
Yeah.
We do have some saves floating around. I'm not sure I really want to argue for Red Wedding since I was against it. But we do have the saves floating around.
Right.
You do.
Well,
I like, especially with the thought of a utility, there's just so many, like, ladies out there that you can take care of. It can win you the game if you have a lord and a lady out and you're like, I need two power.
Oh, I don't disagree. Let's put in a maybe for now. How about that?
Okay. Well, then, next one up is Winter Festival.
Definite keep.
Yeah, I like that. I like that surprise two power win. You're so close to winning, yeah.
Yeah, how many times have you been sitting there at 14 and going, if only I was running that stupid plot?
Yep. Yeah.
Plus decent golden initiative if we need it. It's a 4-5-1.
Yeah, 4-5-1. Yeah, that's solid.
Arguably the best stats in the game.
Nice initiative with what we're trying to do here.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so next up we have March to the Wall, which I vote as a keep. Like Daryl was saying earlier, it's one of those plots I love. I keep thinking, man, I wish I had that, but I can never seem to quite fit it in a plot deck.
Yep, I agree.
Oh, shit, yeah. It's so good.
Okay. That sends us to Dry Season. I'm kind of maybe on it. I could take it or leave it, depending on the group.
I really like the card, but I'm kind of on the fence about it, too.
Yeah, I could go with cutting it. I think it might kick us in the dick more than it would do us some good.
Put it on the maybe list. We'll come back and revisit it.
Okay. There's a lot on this maybe list.
Oh,
yeah, that's,
boy.
That's fine. You that's have to better. Do four and see what you're looking at. How many slots are we really playing with here?
Sure thing. All right. Up next, I had Blockade pulled. It running both it and Dry Season may be overkill. In this
Agreed. Game. Should be one or the other. Probably Dry Season.
Man, I don't know, man. Sometimes popping Blockade in there can be really, really good.
Or terrible.
I mean, it can be terrible.
Well, if they're running reducers, then you're kind of screwed. Like, Blockade can only do so much.
I say cut Blockade.
Oh, wow. Look who Bruno sided with this time.
Yeah.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
I'm fine with cutting
That's
it.
That's fine.
I mean,
cut
especially
it.
If it's between the two, Dry Season has that two claim.
Exactly. You know how many Knights of the Hollow Hill decks are still being played? You know how many people still play? They're now running Kingdom of Shadows and the King's Road locations. I mean, a lot of decks, you run that, they're going to start off the gold. And then you still got the Seas. You're not screwing a lot of people over like you used to be able to do.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's true.
Sadly true.
I think Blockade ends up hurting you more times than it hurts somebody else.
Yeah, Choke just can't. I just feel so bad about running Choke right now with just the resources that are available and the efficiency the game's at. I think trying to go a hard Choke route is just, it's a losing battle, whereas at least Dry Season is control on top of the Choke. Because, yeah, you're hitting their stuff, but you're knocking out a bunch of pesky locations. Pentashis are shut off. Like, there's a lot of good things there.
Okay. Well, we're making progress. We're at 12 plots now. Next up is The King's Law, which I'm personally digging. Still got that high initiative, and there's a lot of shadows around.
Yeah, I like it too.
I don't cut it. The biggest thing you're worried about is Preston, and he gets around it.
Preston, yeah. Jamie. I mean, there's a lot of good cards.
But Jamie's going to be out. Like, if Jamie hits the field, you play him and you bring him out so you can get that draw going. I just, curveball. It would be a curveball.
Right. Well, the potential matchup of facing a heavy Shadow's deck even would work out too. And not to mention it is going to win you initiative, so you're going to draw off that Bay of Vice as well.
Right, and also it is, I mean, some of these plots we're just sticking in our bank. They're just in our reserves. They're at a maybe.
Right.
We're hoping we're going to win this game. Yeah, we're hoping we win this game by the sixth turn, you know, at best anyway, right? Hopefully that sixth turn we can play that Rise of the Kraken. That's our, you know, we got a nice board set up. We're ready to go. And if we got saves at this point, we're not going to even worry about your opponent Valoring. And if they Valor earlier, we're in even better shape. So it's just a nice plot to have if you're running against, and that's the whole point of using Defiance, is you want to have some of those plots to use if you need them.
Right.
Yeah, all right.
Okay. Well, next up then, I've got Twist of Fate, which I'm still digging for previously mentioned reasons, the stats.
I like it too, Will.
Normally they use it to abuse it to clear your board, but if you have the saves, kind of that downside is mitigated a little bit. So, I'd say it's fine.
Yeah, and plus, you know, we've got it as an option. You know, if the Valor has been telegraphed, like, that's always the best time if you can play it on their Valor. And since we've got that extra, you know, plot kind of cushion because of the agenda, you know, if we feel it's coming, we've got it. If not, well, we can wait and hope we don't have to use it.
Yeah.
Okay, the next one here is Battle of Oxcross, which I think, now that we've got the Fury in, we can probably safely drop.
All right, I got one more suggestion for you guys, just something I thought of.
Okay.
I always do this when I go through and do my plot decks. I love having the Fury in there, again, for you to be a Kraken. What if we actually kept Battle of Oxcross in and went with Negotiations as our as a restricted card? We're not really running lots of draw.
Yeah.
And it is a nice two-claimer. I mean, you don't have the gold. You don't have the initiative you get from it. But it could be a card that, just to fill cards back up in our hand and get a two-claim out of it, too, might be better. And with the kill you get from it, potentials you can get from it, Battle Box has to be better. I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there. I can live with either one, but I may like Negotiations better as my restricted card.
Yeah, you know, that is actually a pretty good point. You know, looking through the deck, our draw currently consists of, what, Sam, the Reader, and an LIV?
Yeah.
Bay of Ice. Yeah. But yeah, I think
Bay
that's right.
Yeah.
And a lot of your stuff's cheap, so you can play out, you shouldn't have a problem playing out your hand, even if the draw is going your way. It should never hurt you to, you're never going to be sitting on 10 cards, ruining having to negotiate.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, no, I really like that. I think Negotiations has a great spot here. So if we add it in, drop the Fury, but keep Battle of Oxcross, we are still sitting at 12.
Oof.
Well, what were some of our maybes?
The maybes, I believe, that we were looking at were...
If we took out Blockade and Red Wedding, that was two more gone, right?
Red Wedding was a maybe that was still on here, I thought.
Yeah, Bruno, I was fighting for that.
Yeah.
If Kyle wants it, then I say get rid of it.
Oh, cold-blooded. Fine, cut it. I'm not going to play this damn deck anyways.
I thought you were committing to play this in the regional, Kyle. What the heck?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Dude, I'd
not
bring
if you're
going to
be at Missouri. Not
yeah, I was going to say, I'd be willing to throw it together and play a couple games with it.
Heck, I got a store championship this weekend. Maybe I'll try it there.
Okay.
There you go.
That'd be sweet. I think you should.
I only said maybe.
All right.
Yeah. Key phrase. Pay attention, guys. It's all about the details.
Oh,
okay,
man.
So we're at 11. We still need to drop one more out of those plots.
All right, give us the names again. Run through one more time.
Yep. Valor, Rise of the Kraken, Winds of Winter, Time of Ravens, Winter Festival, March to the Wall, Dry Season, King's Law, Twist of Fate, Battle of Oxcross, and Negotiations at the Great Sept.
All right, I know which one I want to cut, but I'll say mine last.
Well, I think that we can cut the Winds of Winter. I think if it were me, I think the payoff's not quite as good in this particular deck type. Since we don't mind if it's winter, but we're not really banking on it. I mean, it's a, what is it, 3-3-2? 3-2-2, something like that?
3-3-2. Or sorry, no, it is 3-2-2. Yeah.
3-2-2, so, I mean, there's a good chance our Bay of Ice could kick us in the dick with it, too. But we aren't doing a lot of targeted kills, so that The two claim could help. Oh, God. I'm back to maybe. You guys go.
I'm still just not sold on Winter Festival's effect. The stats are nice, and we're not.
You're wrong, Will. You're wrong.
Really sitting on a lot of gold across the board, but it just doesn't feel like it jives with a lot of the other effects we've got going on.
If you're gonna make it winter passively at some point in 10 rounds, Winter Festival is like the ideal card for me for this agenda. I mean, it's perfect. I'll say we have
a ton of
frickin' two claim. I'll say wins as well.
Wins and winner is my choice.
Woo! Suck it, Will.
Yeah, all right.
Because if I'm going versus Wins and Winter versus Winter Festival, Wins and Winter, it has to be winter for you to get that effect. Otherwise, it's a two claim. And Winter Festival, at least I get one even if it's not winter. And you get the better gold and the better initiative. Now, the only other one I considered was maybe Dry Season, but again, it's better initiative for two claim, and its effect is going to happen all the time, whether it's winter or not. So that's why I throw out Winds of Winter.
Boom.
Okay. There we go. We'll drop Winds of Winter, and the deck is set.
We did it.
Sweet.
Yeah. I will post that deck list with the episode, and I'll probably throw it together, maybe see if I can play a couple games online with it, see how it goes.
Yeah.
So, Will, did you make this on AGOT cards?
No, I gave up because that's what crashed and lost me all the plots. All
right, so you got a card game ADB?
Yes.
Can you send me a link to it? Maybe I really will tool around with it a little bit and see if I want to play it this weekend.
Yeah, sure will.
Yeah, the more I look at it, the more fun I think it could be, so.
I mean, it's really just a pile of Greyjoy cards with good Greyjoy cards with some extra utility with your agenda.
Yeah.
Right.
There's not a lot not to like.
That's what we set out to do, right?
Exactly. That's what we were hoping to do with this agenda, is try to throw in, really, you're throwing in like three extra utility plots that you potentially could use, which I right now see King's Law being one of them. I mean, if I'm building this Greyjoy Winter deck, King's Law is going to be one that I'm going to consider. You know, hey, I'm not going to play that most of the time, but if I need it, sure. Same with even Winter Festival is a potential one, or Dry Season. Those could be, like, they're ones that I maybe want to put in, maybe I don't. I'm glad I have it. Rise of the Kraken, same thing.
Yeah.
Great stuff.
Yeah, so it's actually interesting. You know, you would think, just glancing at it, you'd build your normal 7-card plot deck, and then you would have your 3 sideboard plots, so to speak. But really, you know, as we talked about it and kind of looked at it, we wound up with, you know, more like 4 or 5 in that kind of, you know, maybe sideboardy kind of spot, you know, just so we could have those open. So,
well, odds are you will need, if you're smart about your choices, you should need at least 2 of them in any given game.
Yeah.
If you come across scenarios where you can play them. I mean, just odds are in your favor. And if you're not, and you're not hitting them, then you need to reevaluate a lot of things in your life, personally, professionally.
Tinker.
Yeah. One card that I think is a nice little honorable mention that we didn't put in this deck would be Captain of the Iron Fleet.
Yeah,
I think that card is the tits.
Pretty sweet. He's nice with Andrew, too, right? Nice with Andrew.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So,
yep.
It, you know, not in our final cut. We still are kind of in that habit of playing less attachments. But think about that card. It is really good. I remember when Brett and I decided we were going to run that Greyjoy winter deck. Well, at first it was LIV, and then it was just winter, you know, Song of Ice. And then we just put together just a bunch of good Greyjoy cards, you know, and that was a great card for me at Worlds. So,
also, I like how there's not one Preston, not a single Kingsguard makes a cut.
Or Shadow.
No Shadows cards. That's probably the biggest seller for me on King's Laws. It will literally cannot backfire on you.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's interesting. It's funny that we built this, and a lot of the things are kind of cliche right now. There are a lot of cards in here that people aren't clamoring about as top tier stuff. So,
I think that this deck could be fun. Yeah, I think it could surprise you how much utility this deck has.
Well, I think that's really the way to win right now. I mean, I am not by in the biggest stretch of imagination is the deck builder that John is. But I'm, you know, I'm a big believer that right now, if you can't come up with something revolutionary like Bruno tends to do, I mean, 60-40 pile of good cards and relying on play skill has, I've had by far and away most of my success with that kind of philosophy. I think with the card pool being what it is right now, there's a lot to be said for just putting what you think are the best 60 cards in a kind of formulaic way from a certain house and just seeing what it does.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. That's definitely a very good point, Kyle.
Thank you, John.
Yeah. I figure I got to give you credit once in a while, you know?
Once in a while.
And that's it. Once.
Well, I'll go twice when you marry Danny. That's about it. So.
Aw. I'll pass it along. You are, she said if she had to pick one, like, long shot out-of-stater, John Bruno would be it.
Yeah.
You heard it here. So I apologize to everyone else who's out-of-state. He's going to get an invite, but Bruno is the tops.
Well, thank you.
I think it's the champ cards. I think it's the aura that comes with it.
I think we could probably go ahead and move on to props and slops.
I like it. This is a great, this is an overall great job tonight, boys.
Oh, why, thank you.
Glad you like it.
This is going to be my favorite podcast I've listened to, like, maybe ever.
Wait, wow. So you're going to go listen to this one after hearing
this? Yeah, that's why. Yeah, exactly. It'll definitely be my favorite podcast I've heard this year.
That's amazing. I rarely listen to shows I'm on.
Yeah.
Well, cool. You know, and if something, if you know, if you're listening to the show and something hits you that you feel like you should have brought up or something, dude, feel free to hit us up with it, you know.
Is there an email address or some way I can find out how to contact you guys?
I believe that you could get us, get a hold of us at twochampsonechump@gmail.com.
Wow. Is there a Facebook page?
Let me check. Looks like we do. Facebook.com/twochampsonechump.
Mm-hmm.
Twitter?
Still hoping to get that 500th like.
Is there Twitter?
There is Twitter. Twitter.com/twochampsonechump. No. We're everywhere.
You can also
love the social networks.
You can also text me at work, as Matt Phillips decided to do this week.
Nice.
He texted me, he's like, I listened to it 10 times. What is the joke you make about boxer briefs? And I was like, what are you talking about? He like gave me the minute mark. I had to go listen to it. Of course, Daryl was talking over me. He's like, I need to know, Kyle. So I had to stop what I was doing at work and listen to myself.
Because I was talking over you?
Yeah, we were talking about boxer briefs, and you mentioned it's a great compromise. And I said it was the best American compromise since the 3/5. But you missed that.
I didn't miss that.
Jibber jabbering.
I didn't miss that. I could have sworn we stopped and was like, dude, whoa.
But anywho, he was very upset because he couldn't hear the joke.
Missouri compromised.
Yes, but he missed the joke and was very upset, so I had to stop what I was doing to look it up for Matt. So yeah, just text me if you have questions about the show. I'm not doing anything Monday through Friday.
Yeah, send me a Snapchat.
Oh, you betcha I will.
Oh, here come the dick pics.
Dick pics for days.
Yep.
Is that your handle? Dick pics for days?
Dick pics for days, yes.
Slops and props. It is back on focus here.
Yeah, yeah. Whew. Slops to focus.
Props and slops.
Props to open-mindedness and creativity.
Ooh.
Yeah. You know, I've got some slops, some actual legitimate slops. Okay?
Let's hear it. Go ahead.
So I'm at Walmart the other night, and I walked by the $5 DVD bin, okay, because I'm a sucker for $5 DVDs. So I see Blade Runner, the final cut, and I think to myself, okay, it's been roughly 11 years since I tried to watch Blade Runner, and I fell asleep in it because I was so bored. So I'm going to try and give it another try. And yes, I'm aware this slop is going to get me hate mail. And I sat down Sunday night and I watched all the way through Blade Runner, the final cut. And I just came away feeling decidedly meh about it. I felt almost exactly the same as I did after watching Prometheus. It was a visually arresting movie, with some really cool, you know, vistas to look at. But And, you know, in a few cool scenes, some interesting concepts. But just overall, the movie lacked the substance that I was led to believe it would have. And I just, yeah, didn't care for it that much.
Maybe you should have watched that movie, like, I don't know, 30 years ago?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
if I
might be why.
The day I came out of the womb, then it would have been impressive.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. Part of it's probably the pacing is way different with an 80s movie than today's movies. But, yeah, I just didn't care for it very much.
I would agree with you on that whole thing, including Prometheus.
Yeah.
Yep. I'll give a props to the new Divergent movie, being originally from Illinois. Anything that takes place in Chicago is kind of cool. But it was really good. It was actually pretty good.
Yeah. I read all three books, and overall the first book was fairly, you know, fairly well represented for the first movie. I think they left a couple things out that should have been included to put into the second movie, but I enjoyed the movie. It was definitely a good movie. Not as good as The Hunger Games. The thing I liked best about Divergent was seeing the trailer for The Maze Runner, which I'm actually really excited.
Yes. Oh my goodness. That looked amazing.
Cause that book series is probably one of my favorite of the young adult type books trilogies.
You know, people bash on young adult, but sometimes you just need an easy read at the end of the day that still has some meat to it.
Yep.
And those are great for it. Yeah, I thought it was good. I get really scared when there are no-name actors playing lead roles, but I thought the leads did a great job. So, that was my big concern, and it was great.
I got some pretty crappy props and slops. Well, first I'm going to give you really crappy slops. So, this past Saturday, when we were going to a store championship, I had three guys from Sacramento come down to travel along with us, and one from Oxnard come down. So Lucas Sedlaski and I were in my car, followed by Brooks Mitchell, Eric Wood, and Ronnie Rivas from Sacramento in the car behind us. While we are driving on our way to the Game Store out in Monrovia, about 45 minutes to an hour away from where I live, I got hit by a car on the freeway.
Oh.
But that's not even the worst part, because there was this hubcap amazingly appeared in the middle of the freeway coming directly at us. So it caused a little bit of an issue in there, and a car turned into me. But anyway, my car I only had for 6 days. I just got a new car.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, I've had the car for 6 days, and yeah, now it's being repaired. But good thing that, you know, you have insurance and a good deductible. So that's my slops. The props goes to Brooks Mitchell for winning the tournament, because he did a great job with the Conquest deck. And I'd give him props for doing such a great job on that tournament. And also for Eric Wood telling me to watch the movie The Exam, which is a really, really cool movie on Netflix. And I would recommend people go watch that movie.
Nice.
I'll do it tomorrow. I'll raise you one.
It's a really cool movie.
I'll have to check that out.
Maybe at work.
Well,
I'll watch it at work.
I have a prop. It is to the HBO series True Detective.
Oh, amazing.
Starring Woody Harrelson and Matthew McConaughey. I've only watched the first two episodes, and I started it day before yesterday. And I started at midnight. I was just like, I'm just going to watch one episode. You know, I've heard it was good. Why not? And I could not stop myself from watching a second episode that night. So I was up till, you know, 2 a.m. But it was fantastic. It is fantastic so far. Matthew McConaughey is not known for his ability to be a versatile actor. And that being said, I have not seen, you know, Magic Mike or Dallas Buyers Club.
You haven't seen that movie.
Yeah, I haven't seen Magic Mike or Dallas Buyers Club. I know I'll love Magic Mike. I mean, come on. But in my experience with Matthew McConaughey, it has not been great as far as being a versatile actor. And the role that he portrays in True Detective is fantastic. So if you have not seen that, it's on HBO. You need to watch it. It is incredible.
And I just want to throw a little bit of additional props out to Mr. Aaron Glazer, Pulse Glazer, who I gather got married last weekend to a great girl named Carla. And I say great because I hear she enjoys listening to Props and Slops on the show.
Great job.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, okay then.
I concur. I concur. All right.
Anybody else got one?
Nope.
Yeah, that's pretty much it for me.
Thank you guys for having me on tonight.
Thanks for being on, John.
Yeah, thank you, John Bruno, and thank you, folks at home, for listening to another fine-ass episode of Two Champs and a Chump.
Danger Zone!